Welcome to the first edition of the Official Titan Podcast. My name is Mike Keith, joined by Amy Wells. Welcome.
Hey, thanks.
And Jim Wyatt, senior writer, editor from TitansOnline.com. We're glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
Now, Jim will be a regular part of the OTP. For each one, it will be Amy Wells and myself. This was Amy Wells' idea for us to start doing a podcast. Amy, what brought you to the conclusion that the Titans needed their own podcast?
I don't know if it was my idea.
It was your idea.
You kept
nagging for 2 years about doing a podcast.
Let's be honest, motivating force.
Yeah, motivating, nagging, very much the same thing. So anyway, proceed with your rationale as to why we needed more work to do a podcast.
You know, I am a big podcast listener. I listen to a lot of different podcasts because we're on the road so much and we travel all the time. I listen to them on flights. I listen to them when we drive. So listening to other football podcasts, listening to some other teams having podcasts, I just wanted to be part of the party.
All right. So after you started this a couple years ago, I actually started listening to podcasts.
See, they're cool, right?
I know. They are. They are. I have to give you credit. They're great. There are actually some very good Titans podcasts out there that I enjoy listening to, but I enjoy a wide range of things as far as podcasts go. Jim Wyatt, are you a podcast listener?
I am. You know, they're great to put in, you know, driving down the road, especially on the road back from Indianapolis. I listened to, it wasn't necessarily a podcast, but I listened to Mike Mayock's review of the draft. I mean, it's a good way to kind of plug in, you know, pass the time when you're sitting in traffic, and I enjoy it myself.
We don't want to just be a time killer. We want to provide some information, but part of the reason in doing this is there are people that we have a chance to run into who we find very interesting. There are situations and things that go on sort of behind the scenes that we're going to be able to have more time to tell stories about, because in all honesty, in a lot of what we do, we're on a deadline. And where we have a lack of space or a lack of time overall for a video or whatever, this will give us the ability to take some of those experiences and maybe share them in a different way, which might differentiate the Official Titans Podcast.
Well, in all seriousness, the amount of times that we've said, hey, we want to tell this story, we have 5 minutes to do it. We have 3 minutes to do it. We have one segment where we can tell you all the best stuff, and we do our best to do that. There's so many other cool things that we have access to, that we have a chance to just source. I mean, we talk to some incredible people. We have extra little nuggets that Titans fans will for sure care about or find just as interesting as we do. You definitely will. We just haven't had a place to put them. We haven't had any sort of vessel to get them out to people. So I think this is going to be a cool way to do that.
Well, like one of the best parts of our job is getting to go to the NFL Combine. We've just returned from the NFL Combine. Jim Wyatt, how many combines have you been to?
Started back in the early 2000s, and I've seen them grow. I don't know if I've done the count, I've seen it shift around from in the RCA Dome. You know, when the media was located in the convention center, I was with a Tennessean there. You'd spend most of your time in the hallway waiting for your team officials to come by, you know, staking out agents leading up to free agency. The crowd has doubled, tripled, quadrupled. I mean, as far as media turnout, the interest in this event is enormous now, from fans watching inside of the convention center to obviously watching on NFL Network. It's a completely different game from when I first started going.
Amy Wells, this is your seventh combine that you've just completed.
Yep.
In that time, have you ever seen anything like the reaction to Shaquem Griffin, the outstanding linebacker who does not have a left hand, from Central Florida?
It was absolutely bananas. I really geek out about the combine every year. It's my favorite thing. Not as many other people care about it as much as I do, but in that moment, in that room, it erupted. He did
one. Talk about the bench press.
Yeah, during that bench press. He did one, he did two, and people were kind of cheering him on. as he kept going, the room just got louder and louder and louder because it was like, oh, my gosh, he is still going. It was the craziest thing to watch, and the energy in that room, you could feel it. We were watching it on a TV feed because kind of short, can't see up over everybody. But I'm watching it on the TV, and I'm listening to the room grow, and I was like, this is incredible. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
And I think everybody's intrigued by him coming in. Everybody knows his story. He was born, had his left hand amputated. He used a prosthetic. He had a very productive college career. It was funny. He showed up at the media availability, and he kind of kidded right out of the gate. He expected three people to be there waiting for him, and there was a big crowd there. He goes out and lifts 20. Back when he was a freshman, he told a story. He could barely lift the bar when he had the prosthetic put on, and then he runs a great time. His brother Shaquille came in here on a pre-draft visit here at St. Thomas Sports Park last year, and I think, he received a lot of questions about his brother then. I think at that time, I think people probably thought he would be a long shot to make the draft. I think now you hear people talk about him. You see the reaction from the NFL stars around the league. I mean, he's going to get drafted. It's just a matter of how high.
And what position he plays.
Right.
I wonder, at 6'1", 227, running 4.38, doing 20 reps on the bench at 225, I wonder if he's not a safety.
Yeah, I mean, really? He can cover a lot of ground. I mean, there's no doubt with his speed. You could see him bulking up a little bit and being productive at the linebacker spot, too. I'll be curious to see how many visits he makes and just how that plays out.
You don't think safety?
I'm surprised to hear safety. I think, but now as I think about it, as Jim was just talking, it makes a lot of sense, actually. He's a big guy. He'd have to, at the safety position, you've got to keep up with some fast, slippery little guys.
Well, and those guys play the run, which he can do. I think their inside linebacker is probably not a spot for him. If he plays on the outside, is he too light is what some people are wondering, because he's not a big guy. But with the NFL, that's Jonathan Cyprian's size, roughly.
Yeah.
227 pounds.
Yeah, and this guy, the way he plays, he's no fluke.
There.
He's a very productive guy, from pressures to making plays on the ball to tackling. He has not had any limitations. And I think that, it'll be different playing in the NFL, obviously. It's going to be, better competition. Certainly, he'll face some challenges that he didn't face in college. He played against some top players at the collegiate level, which is helping his cause.
Yeah, and if he can hang with someone and stick with them all the way through, he'll tackle them every time.
Oh, every time.
He's sure of that.
Well, the one thing, he will do defensive back drills in his Central Florida Pro Day, right?
That's what he said. That is correct. And some teams will probably look at him as a safety. Some teams will look at him as a linebacker. The thing that helps you in the league is being able to show you can do a number of different things.
You got it.
I think he's a guy that will be able to help on special teams. So it helps his value.
Overall, though, had it not been the Shaquem Griffin story at the Combine, it would have been the Saquon Barkley Combine, because this running back from Penn State went out and did everything and did it brilliantly, didn't have to work out, and could be the first running back taken number one overall since what, Kajana Carter? Is that right?
I think that's right. I think what helps him is the fact, looking at last year's draft class and looking really at the running back class over the last couple of years, you're seeing running backs come in and making their teams significantly better. And this is the best running back coming out of college football this year, without question, if not the best running back coming out in some time. So the thing that works against him is the fact that some other running backs have gone later, and you still can get a big bang for your buck. Can you take him at one? I like him enough where I think I'd strongly consider doing it.
Well, especially because Cleveland also has the fourth pick. If you're Cleveland and you want Barkley, you might have to take him at one, because if you don't, he might not be there at four.
Right. But at four, they could still get anything else.
Well, they could get
they could get a quarterback.
They could
four.
Get a quarterback, especially, Amy, if they go after A.J. McCarron, which is being talked about, they could go after a quarterback to groom.
Yeah, absolutely. And, there are plenty in this draft. We were talking about quarterbacks, I feel like, the entire week. There are plenty there.
That's been the other story, no doubt. Let's run through, do we have anything set on number one players at positions? Let me run through them. Saquon Barkley, the number one running back, no doubt.
Easy.
All right. Calvin Ridley, the number one wide receiver, wide out from Alabama. Do we think he's the top guy?
I would agree with that.
Jim? I do, too. I do, too.
All right. Quentin Nelson, the number one offensive lineman from Notre Dame.
Yes.
I agree with that, but I think Isaiah Wynn from Georgia obviously helped his stock here at the Combine.
I do, too. Now, there's not a consensus number one tackle. You hear Connor Williams from Texas, Orlando Brown from Oklahoma, who did not really impress on the bench press. Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame. No consensus there. Anybody think there's a number one?
No. Well, I mean, someone has to be first, but I don't think that you're first of a great group.
Right.
If that makes sense. And that feels harsh to say.
Well,
but
it doesn't seem like it's a good tackle year.
Yeah, it's not an outstanding class. So, yeah, I mean, we could designate one of them first of the mediocres, but that doesn't seem nice.
And I think Brown's out. I mean, I initially thought that after this combine, maybe going in, he'd emerge as being number one. I think he had a bad weekend and certainly hurt his case a lot.
Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State or Hayden Hurst from South Carolina, the two top tight ends, either one of those two take over the number one spot?
Need to see more of Goedert. I think Hurst is the number one guy in my mind and a lot of other people's at this point.
I was going to say Hurst as well.
Former baseball player who's 25 years old. Defense, number one inside linebacker, Roquan Smith, Georgia. Agree or disagree?
I agree
with that.
Cornerback, Denzel Ward, Ohio State, ran in the low 4.3s.
I think by a landslide.
Yeah, that time helped him a bunch. Yeah.
Unless it's Minka Fitzpatrick, who's the number one rated safety, but some people think he may play corner in the NFL. The Alabama standout just doesn't look like there's anything he can't do.
Yeah, I mean, again, bringing up Mayock again, he was talking about he could play either corner spot. He could play nickel. He could play dime. He could play, some small linebacker for you. He's a very valuable guy who, again, can do a number of things.
Number one edge rusher, Bradley Chubb, North Carolina State.
I agree with that. I don't think is anybody really even close to him after that. I mean, Arden Key's a heck of a prospect. Landry, I think, helped himself with the combine with some of the things he did, but Chubb is head and shoulders above everybody
else. Do you think
else.
Chubb, is the feeling there that Chubb can play outside linebacker in a 3-4 or that he needs to play with his hand down in a 4-3?
I think either one, but I think he's – personally, I think he's probably better with hand down in a 4-3.
Vita Vea, 6'4". 347 pounds from Washington, bench pressed 225 41 times, and then ran a 5.140 and looked fantastic doing it for a man that size. That guy has got to be the ultimate interior lineman nose tackle prospect.
He just looks like a monster. Everything he does, he is massive. It's insane.
What scares me about him is he looks like a Baltimore Raven.
Boo, yeah, don't put
does.
Him there.
He does.
I know.
Yeah. It's fun to kind of sit and listening to him talking. Kind of a laid-back guy, with a little bit of a smile, but he's got some swagger to him. And that's I've seen some Ravens look like him in the past.
Daron Payne, Alabama, maybe the top true defensive tackle.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so who am I missing? What am I missing? Throw something out that you don't like about that list of potential number ones.
I mean, I think the quarterback
situation. The quarterback. See, I was getting to that.
Yeah,
notice I did not mention quarterbacks because my question is, Jim White, jumping ahead, did we come away from this thing with a number one quarterback?
We came away with a lot of conversation about Josh Allen and his arm strength. Is that enough to pole vault him to the top? I mean, Baker Mayfield is I don't think he's going above, the Darnolds or the Allens or probably even the Rosens. He's a cocky, confident kid who I'm curious to see how, what we hear coming out of this draft about what coming out of this combine about what NFL teams thought about his personality and his smarts. You hear he's a pretty sharp guy in those meetings, but The quarterbacks intrigued me, but I think Allen helped himself the most. Other guys are going to help themselves in pro days.
I like how you describe him as cocky slash confident, as if one could maybe offset the other just a little
Talking
bit.
Talking about Mayfield?
Mayfield, yeah.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because, you know, he sat there and said, hey, if anybody's going to turn the Browns around, it's going to be me. He talked about being the best quarterback in this draft. I personally like his swagger a little bit. I mean, but he kind of crosses the line with the, you know, with the crotch grab, with the – I don't mind the –
The thing in Arkansas, too, the offseason.
Yeah, with the incident. And he talked about all those. He's very open in front of reporters. And I'm sure he was open and had to tackle all of that, with NFL teams as well. But the quarterbacks, as always, will start to carry the conversation and will change the draft based on what teams think about these guys.
Do you think he had to have a better-than-average workout to offset some of those character issues? Because I don't think
that's a great question
necessarily that his performance that day offset some of the debauchery that you could be getting.
Well, I think he did some of that by going to the Senior Bowl and doing what he did at the Senior Bowl, because you would think he, you know, a lot of guys don't go to the Senior Bowl who are in his shoes. He chose to go. I think he started answering some questions there. But I think the Josh Allen talk, when more and more people see him physically, if you're in a situation that, I mean, if you're the Giants at two, if you could get Josh Allen and let him play behind Eli Manning for a year or two, I think you would be thrilled.
Right.
I mean, the guy was throwing at 70, 75 yards in the air. It's natural to have the Carson Wentz comparisons. Anybody that has questions about guys coming out of a little bit of a smaller school, not playing in the big conference. I mean, I think Wentz helped him in that regard as well. Before we steer too far away from quarterbacks, I mean, Lamar Jackson's another guy who obviously generated some buzz at the combine. The question is where does he play? I mean, he was pretty adamant that, hey, nobody's asked me to play receiver, but then teams want him to do receiver drills and want to look at him at a position other than quarterback. He's a great athlete, maybe the best athlete at the combine. So how do things play out with him?
Can I ask a question about that? Is that offensive? It felt to me like he was almost offended not even that the conversation was happening, whether it was something that was said to him, whether it wasn't. I mean, that was a whole discussion about who actually made that request and to whom.
Well, it was very different than, say, Joe Webb when he came out of UAB. Joe Webb was a guy who, I mean, he was just looking to get a pro job.
Right.
And so he's like, hey, I'll do whatever I want to. And now Joe Webb has gone on to have a really nice NFL career as a third quarterback / receiver / special teams player. I think this is different because Lamar Jackson considers himself a quarterback, and I think he feels disrespected if you don't give him the opportunity to go at it in that way. And there's some scouts and draft analysts who think a team is going to fall in love with Lamar Jackson and then build their ball club around him. That tends to be a little scary because that's almost like a Tim Tebow type situation.
Right. But wouldn't you still want to, I mean, in a receiver drill, even if you're going through it, you're still showing that you can run fast. You're still showing that you are able to handle the football and do, you can show athleticism and you can show that you're willing to be a team player. It feels like there are so many other kind of...
So you think he should?
I think he should. And I think that there are some auxiliary things that you can do. I mean, listen, there are 32 teams.
Right.
There are not a lot of these jobs. You want to be a quarterback, that's phenomenal. But sometimes you've got to get in the building first.
Well, that's right. That's the Joe Webb theory.
Right.
I feel differently in his case, Jim, and you can agree or disagree, because I think he's going either Thursday or Friday in the draft. If he doesn't go in the first round, I think he's going day two. I don't think he's a guy who's going to last until day three. I'm using Joe Webb just as the example off the top of my head, but he was not going to be drafted until day three, if at all. I think if I'm Lamar Jackson, I stick with quarterback and I say this is what I'm committed to. I agree with his mindset. I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying, Amy. I think you make a good point. But I think in his case, because of where it looks like he's going to go, I think I stick to my guns if I'm him. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, and I actually believe that somebody's going to fall in love with him. It always happens. I mean, somebody's going to be impressed with his pro day, and somebody's going to be willing to take a chance on him based on his ability. I mean, the guy's an uncanny athlete. He won a Heisman Trophy. That's why I can't, you know, you can't blame him for sticking, wanting to stick to his guns. You know, he's got a chance to get one team to bite, and that changes everything. Another thing interesting about him is he doesn't have an agent. You know, so you know, some of the stuff that came out about whether or not he would, you know, would, how the whole conversation went about whether teams want him to work out as a running back or a quarterback. I wonder how that no agent part is going to play out.
An agent.
Yeah. He explained there that, hey, with these rookie contracts, everything's slotted.
Yeah,
that, but, you know, I don't need one for money. That this guy's taking some of my money, but advice and how things
repping are, you, yeah. Handling yeah. situations.
Yeah. Who's doing this, mom? Like,
he says his mom's involved. He says he has a lawyer that's involved as well, but doesn't really have anybody that's gone through this process before.
I mean, it's fine if you're a 10-year veteran.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think as a rookie, for what they're hearing, for what they're sharing with teams, for making sure you get on your visits properly, just the administration of the process, man, that's worth, what, 3%, 4%?
Yeah. Just making sure you're getting to the right places to work out and making sure you are, you know, spending your time trying to impress certain teams, getting the best advice on how to handle things.
I admire what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I admire that mindset, but it is just such a complicated process.
Well, and I guess you don't know until you know, if
exactly.
that makes sense. I mean, he's going to be in over his head quickly, and hopefully he will rise and it won't be a big deal. But just from a team standpoint, because that's what we see, you've got guys coming through here, you've got flights, you've got this, you've got that, and that's just, as you were saying, the logistical
stuff. The minutia.
Stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you have to prep for all these interviews. You've got to make sure that you're doing the proper workouts that you need to be doing, and it's a lot to handle. So, I mean, if you and your lawyer and your mom think you can handle it all, that's great, but I think that he's in for a less than super fun month and a half.
Jim White, thanks for swinging by. And we're going to have you back. We're going to do two editions this week to start off the official Titans podcast.
It's like a flash sale.
It's a flash sale. Yes, we're trying to get – hopefully people will subscribe. If we don't, there may only be two official Titans podcasts. Please subscribe. Yes, that would be great. Jim White, thank you.
Appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jim.
We get to meet a lot of neat people. And we can't say we meet – Charles Davis, because we know Charles Davis. I went to college with Charles Davis.
You are bros with Charles Davis.
I've known Charles for over 30 years. He's a good friend, and to see all of his success is incredible. He's on the Fox number 2 Sunday broadcast team. He's on NFL Network in an even bigger role than he was before. He's the voice of Madden Football, which all the kids know him for. To us, he is part of our Titans television preseason broadcast crew, and what an honor it is for us to have him. Charles Davis gave us a little bit of time at the Combine to talk about preparation.
Charles, you have so much information in your brain. Every year we talk to you at the
Hopefully
draft.
Hopefully some of it's useful.
It is. A lot of it's useful. Every year we talk to you about draft and about the Combine. How do you prepare for something like this? There's just so much information to sift through.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the easiest way I can answer it is, for those who have gone through college or have prepared for a career, it's that study, it's the research, it's even if you're in your career and you're not in school anymore, you have to get prepared for presentations, right? You got to get prepared to go out on the road if you're a salesperson and, hey, I've got to present this here, right? Hey, big meeting in Tokyo this week and you got your charts and your graphs. You've got to put that time in. You've got to do the background. You've got to get the research done. That's the only way I can do it, because I'm fortunate enough to call NFL games now. So I don't get by osmosis being in the college game and it all just kind of filters around. You got to fight it a little bit more. You got to read a little bit more. And I try to do my best to get the job done.
But a lot of people don't know your story of how you got to this point. You did not start out when you left the University of Tennessee in broadcasting.
No.
Give us the quick path for those who don't know.
Yeah, I got into sports administration. I wanted to be, you and I went to school together.
Yeah.
and you helped me on the broadcasting side when we were in school, and then I left to try and make a living, I thought. And so I wanted to be in sports administration. My goal was to be the first black athletic director in the SEC. That was my absolute goal. And Damon Evans beat me to the punch, but I'd gotten out of the field by that time. But I really appreciate, he actually called me and said, I know this is, you wanted this. And anyway, another story. But athletic administration was it. So it was, you know, Stanford University. It was the United States Olympic Committee. It was Disney Sports. I was the director of the PGA Tour golf event they had there. And then I got into broadcasting on a fluke. And thank God that fluke happened.
Was it Golf Channel?
I've never had this much fun. It was actually Fox Sports South. Steve Craddock, who now works for Fox Sports, called me and said he had two football games he needed an analyst for 8 days before the first game. First game was Mississippi State, Memphis State. August whatever, 1997. And I'll remember it because if I'm not mistaken, because time blurs it, but I feel like I have this right, that was the night Princess Di died.
It is.
That was the night that she died in a car wreck. And I was in Starkville, Mississippi. Had to stay over that night after the game and stayed up all night on the loop watching
CNN
coverage of what was going on and what had happened that night. So I'll never forget that. That was when Kiefer McGee, the running back from Mississippi State, had drowned that summer, played the big game. They kicked the field goal and won it. Emotional. And that was my first game ever. And luckily enough, I never looked back.
You've done a lot of college, obviously. Now you're doing the NFL. What's different between calling and broadcasting college games than doing NFL games?
I'm going to give credit to one of our colleagues because we're all in this group together, okay? Kevin Harlan, CBS Sports, TNT Basketball, one of the great voices, one of the great game callers that's out there. I called him before the first NFL game I did back in 2007, 8, whatever it was. I said, Kevin, I need your advice. What is it? And he said, the best way I can tell you is you're a college game caller. And he said, those great stories that you have about kids where you take the helmet off and tell all about it, college fans love that. NFL fans don't. He said, so those stories that you have about people in college, you can use a cleaver to tell the story. In the NFL, dagger. He said, the pro fans, they want to know what the score is. Am I up on my bet? And how's my fantasy team doing? They're not as invested in, and he came from these beginnings and he did this. College fans like that more. And that's the best advice I got from someone.
You have worked with so many different play-by-play announcers.
Lucky.
So many different styles.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm fortunate. And heck, you and I have worked together, for God's sakes. And then you've survived that.
I was talking
somehow
about the good guys.
No, you survived that somehow. But I've been lucky, you know. And I will tell you that when you do that, and people have to understand, when you work together, there's a marriage for the amount of time that you're together. And how do you make that all work? Is there the give and take? Am I listening to you? Are you listening to me? Are we working together? All those things. Out of all the years I've worked, and as many different people have worked with me, I don't know what they would say about me. That's up to them. What I would say is there are very few people that I would ever say I'd never want to work with them again. Very few. For the most part, it's wonderful. You know, you spend that time, you work, because we all have the same common goal. We want to be great at what we do. We want to give the people a good experience at home. We want to make the game the best we can make it. And when you do all three of those, it's pretty easy to work together.
What's the coolest game or event you've ever covered? What has been the pinnacle for you?
I've been fortunate enough to call 5 Super Bowls now for international broadcast. So that's cool because you're there for that. Boise State, Oklahoma, Fiesta Bowl. Gonna be hard to beat. It's gonna be hard to beat because of everything that happened that night. That was my first BCS game for Fox. And I'd had throat surgery that year. In fact, I'd had throat surgery the month before, and I didn't know if I'd make it back. And I did that with Barry Alvarez and Tom Brenneman and Chris Myers on the sidelines. And then everything that happened that night, how do you beat that? That's hard to top in terms of that. But now the NFL, I get thrills, chills, and spills darn near weekly. But that game in a concentrated deal, David Goliath, hard to beat it.
But your status on the Fox crews has gone way up. Your profile has gone way up. People know you for Madden now.
Yeah, how about that?
Give us the whole Madden summary of how that goes.
You know, for calling a Madden deal, I work with a young man by the name of Brandon Godden.
Good announcer.
Very good announcer. You know Brandon. Brandon started at Butler, called the second Final Four for Butler, went to Georgia Tech as their voice. And then is now calling games for Westwood One, Big Ten Network. He's the number 2 team, Big Ten Football, Fox Sports, the whole deal.
He's
and
a
I
talent.
Think he's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. He's young enough to be my son.
He is?
Don't tell him that, okay? But we get together, we get in a studio, and we have a script. But the script is really...
Is this on Monday or Tuesday every...
Every week during this NFL season, we're Monday, Tuesday.
Okay.
And we'll go over every game that was played over the weekend and provide fresh commentary that you can download into the game starting Wednesday or Thursday. But we just have a script of things, and it's really more of an outline. And he'll call it, I respond, he call it. And we have suggested things to say, but we don't have to say them. So it's not Sally, Dick, and Jane, you know, we try and make it natural. And it's so much fun, and it's so much better for me because having him across, you know, we're looking at each other, playing over, just like calling a game.
Right.
Just like when we call a game, that's thing people may not understand. There should be a lot of eye contact between play-by-play, analyst, sideline, you know. Up in the booth, you're talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You're calling that game together, and you want to involve the person who's down on the field and make it seamless. Mike knows what that's all about, and that's what you're looking for, and that's what we have in Madden.
Are you better known for Madden? I ask because, you know...
It's a legit question.
It's a legit question because it's so huge. Your broadcast career has been so fantastic, and yet that game is so massive. They could have put John Madden in the Hall of Fame just based on his association with that video game.
Think about all of us. We knew Coach Madden because of our generation.
She didn't. Amy didn't.
The younger generation knows Coach Madden from the Madden football game.
Yeah.
And then he coached? Yeah, won a Super Bowl. He did? You get a lot of that. Hall of Fame, really? I mean, all those things, but you're exactly right. Best way I can put it, my son, who's now 20, when I got the Madden gig, I think he was 18, and told him we got the Madden gig, and the reaction from him was priceless. And as I tell people, it's the only time in my broadcast career I've gotten street cred from my son, and it's because of Madden. And I remember I said to him at one point, I said, okay, let me get this straight now. 3 BCS National Championship games, 7 BCS games called overall, NFL games called, blah, blah, blah. And this is the reaction for Madden? And he's like, you don't understand. Madden's big.
He's not wrong.
And I learned. And it's funny because all of his friends who are always, you know, they come by the house and all. It's a different deal when they came by the house. Hey, Mr. Davis, good to see you. How you doing? I didn't know you could speak. I didn't know you could talk. And it was all about Madden.
This dude's living the dream.
I'm living the dream.
I'm a lucky man. I'm a lucky, fortunate guy. And, some days you wake up, you pinch yourself, and you just keep going. And I'm going to keep working hard to try and keep some of it anyway.
We're lucky we know him. Charles Davis.
So cool. I love interviewing Charles every year. It's one of my favorite draft interviews.
You said he was your favorite.
I know.
On the Twitter.
I know I did. And I meant it at the time, but I have lots of...
Meant it at the time.
I have lots of favorites. But Charles really is such a good dude, so knowledgeable. And he speaks in such a way that... You never feel like he's talking over your head, whether you really know what he's saying or not. Ever since I've been talking to him, I've always felt like this is the guy that gets me.
You know, another guy I introduced you to that I know you like is Pat Kerwin.
Oh, Pat Kerwin, another favorite.
He's a great guy. Pat Kerwin is a guy that's worked with 3 NFL teams, and then he got into the media business, and he was a front office guy. He coached, but then he was a front office guy, and he provides an insight on Moving the Chains every weekday afternoon on Sirius XM NFL Radio that is just unrivaled. He is one of my favorite human beings that I know in the National Football League because he has knowledge about everything in terms of player evaluation and how the business works.
Absolutely. And when we sat down to talk to him, he was talking about how this was his 29th combine. And so throughout that combine process, he got to know a special Tennessee Titans current head coach Mike Vrabel. Here's what he had to say about the first time he met up with him.
Pat, you have an interesting perspective on our new head coach Mike Vrabel.
Oh, yeah.
Because you actually got to visit with him at his combine as he came out of Ohio State.
Yeah. I was working with Belichick at the time, and Bill, I think, and I've been with 4 different head coaches, he is the best interviewer because he knows how to get to it right away. So in comes Mike Vrabel. And he was like player 10 of a night of 20. And he comes in, and it's the first player that I watch Belichick. He's kind of excited to see him. And I'm going, whoa, this is different. The other guys, he didn't even shake their hand. He just said, sit down. And then he would turn the lights out and put their college tape on where they were playing really bad. And say, you want to tell me what this is all about? And so they were on edge. When Vrabel comes in, the light's on. Hey, Mike, it's so good. I go, what's going on here? So It turns out that he loved Vrabel. But at the end of the thing, the interview and we did a little film work, he said to Mike, and Mike and I reminisced it today, he said, Mike, I don't have a pick in the second round. And the way my draft's going to go, I'm not going to be able to get you. I can just see it coming. But you will play for me someday.
Wow.
Don't ever forget I told you that. And so when I brought it up to Mike today, he said the first day of free agency, Bill called him and said, I told you I'd be back for you.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he started to tell Vrabel, he said, you played a preseason game last year for Pittsburgh that you played three quarters of a preseason game, and that's exactly what I want you to be for us. And Mike said, I'm sitting here listening to this guy talk about a preseason game. And so when he left the room, Bill said, just put him on my get list. So if you look at the Patriots, Kyle Van Noy was a guy that he liked coming out. Shea McClellan was a guy. And as soon as those guys come free or available via trade, he went and got them. So Vrabel was one of my first experiences with him of what that was all about. The next time I really talked to Mike, it was his first year as a coach. He didn't know what he was doing. And we landed up waiting for our luggage in Mobile together. And he goes, hey, what's this all about? I go, it's a lot of nothing, you know. But everyone thought he'd be a coach, and here he is.
So it's not surprising to you, not only that he's coaching, but how quickly he's risen through the coaching ranks.
Yeah, I thought last year it might have happened for him. And, I asked him today, does he have a mentor? You know, because my experience with young head coaches, even if they're talented, is who's the guy you're talking to at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night when you don't know if you should be yelling at your coordinator, firing your coordinator, benching your quarterback? You know, and so he was funny. He didn't have one, but he said he can get on the phone with Belichick when he needs to. Bill Cowher, who I'm with every week, he said, I can call Bill. And he kind of put those two guys in that place where if I get in those positions, and I'm sure I will, those are the guys I'll be calling.
Why has Bill Cowher not gone back into coaching?
You know, we're real close. We play a lot of golf together, and we do a lot of stuff together. And his wife was very sick, so he left coaching, and then she passed away. And then I used to drag him with me on camp tours. I said, you're not sitting home. And then he found a young lady. She's a singer, a songwriter. He kind of fell in love with her life. I said, you're the only dude with a Super Bowl ring that packs the drums in the back of the van.
He's a roadie.
He is a roadie. So but he said he liked that he walked away. And I think he spent a lot of time with Chuck Knoll talking about his life after football. And then Bill embraces his three daughters and all the grandkids. My wife and I go there for Thanksgiving dinner and things like that. And it's kind of fun to see him with the grandkids. And so what I really found out is that the chin, the growling, the spitting, it's all fake. He's like the nicest guy in the world. And he didn't want to coach.
You seem as though you have a lot of stories to tell. You said earlier that this is your 29th season coming
in
here.
In a row.
It has to stay fun every year. What have you seen change? What's the biggest thing that's changed for you?
Well, I think a couple things. The media end of it. The good news for me is a lot more players will participate now. I think once they put the cameras in there and made this a TV event, I think a lot of players decided, why not? Let me go out and do it. It's not going to hurt me. Because I drafted Keyshawn Johnson, the first pick in the draft, and he dropped like 8 balls in a gauntlet drill. You know, it didn't bother us. Cam Newton couldn't hit the ocean from a raft in the throwing drills. Still was the first pick in the draft. So I do like that the players participate more. I think that's important. I do like that they opened it up for the public to see. And I think the players took it real serious to do well, run well. And then I think there's a lot of fake to it, though, because this was invented for medical reasons. And then guys were hanging around with nothing to do, and a coach got a bright idea to start working them out. So I'm not big on the drills because the players practice them too much. They know them. I used to train them. I know how to help them get faster. But what does it say about being a football player? So I asked a coach that today. I said, okay, you watch a guy on tape, you love him, you come here and he's terrible. What are you going to do about it? Well, one guy said, I'm going to ignore the results here because I watched them on tape and I liked them. Another guy said, I'm going to go back and look at the tape and make sure I saw what I saw. So playing speed, football intelligence can't be measured here. And the questions they ask them on the board are like Ned and the Third Reader. I mean, if you can't pass those, you probably couldn't start for high school. But you got to drill down into them. And they had 15 minutes. John Gruden said today, he goes, yeah, 15 minutes. Because I asked him what's different. Your question to John. John goes, Yeah. Now a bell goes off in 15 minutes. If you don't let the guy go, you lose your second round draft pick.
All right. Yeah. To use a Pat Kerwin line, last one from me.
Yeah. Every day. I say, you know, that's the key that I got five more.
Who is the player that they made the biggest deal about that you've ever seen at the combine that everybody just was so gaga about that they went nuts?
You know, the first name that comes to my mind should be the one I say. I think it was Deion Sanders.
Wow.
You know, what he did, how he ran. You know, people get goofy about the 40 times. And if you're at a position where speed is the requirement and you drop those kind of times in, but I always say the number one time that I was involved in witnessing was Bo Jackson, but wasn't here. Bo, in Tampa, on a grass field, ran 4.18 at 229 pounds. So I always put that up against everything. And I didn't fall in love with him either.
See, there you go. Not falling in love with anybody, no. Pat Kerwin.
The message from Pat Kerwin is truly, don't fall in love with players.
Oh, gosh. It's the thing that I struggle with the worst. Him saying that he never has a guy that he's in love with blew my mind.
Well, and that's why I like him so much, because as a fan of the NFL and as a fan of college football, there are players that all of us fall in love with.
Right.
And I do, you do, everybody does. But if you're going to be a really good evaluator, you can't allow yourself to get emotionally attached. You've got to be pragmatic. You've got to be objective. And that's why I think Pat Kerwin's insight is so great, because he still brings that objectivity that most national analysts don't.
Right. Listening to the way that he speaks about players, his evaluation skills just blow my mind. It's amazing the things that he picks up on and the things that he is able to, I guess, evaluate is the best way to say it. But his brain is fascinating to me. I love talking to him.
I was interested, too, in discussing the growth overall of the NFL Combine, to find somebody there who could explain how it all comes together. 1,300 media, all these players, all these coaches, all these scouts. I mean, what's it supposed to be, like 5,000 people total in that space? It's crazy. And just in the time I've been going, it's gotten even more nuts. They now let the public in. So I found that guy. Through a friend at the league, he connected me with Jeff Foster, who is the president of the National Scouting Combine. And I had a chance to spend a little time with him, and he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I'm not the first guy to ever interview him. I'm not saying that. But he doesn't do a lot of interviews. But I was interested to find out how it all fits together. And in just a few minutes, he sort of gave us the rundown.
How many people work on your combine staff?
We have five full-time employees, including myself, that work for both companies, so National Football Scouting and National Invitational Camp, which is the legal name of the combine.
So you don't actually work for the National Football League?
Technically, no. National Football Scouting, which is what I'm technically employed by, is currently owned by 21 teams. The combine, National Invitational Camp, is owned by all 32 teams, but I'm an executive of that organization and not technically an employee.
How long does it take to plan every part of the combine?
That's a great question. I think we spend most of the year, a couple of us, working on it. But in earnest, we really begin in October.
What is the most difficult part of planning the NFL Combine?
Logistically, the most difficult part is the medical scheduling. So there's such a high number of players, the most we've ever had this year, and the unpredictability of the number of tests that will be ordered from year to year make it the most challenging in a very compressed time frame. To manage all of the medical scheduling. We have a great partner in IU Health that works with us. They've been doing this for 32 years now, and without them it wouldn't be possible from a medical capacity. But outside of those logistics, probably the greatest challenge most recently is managing the collective goals of the clubs and the evolution of the event and the fan engagement and that portion of it that's important to the league as a whole.
Would those things that you just laid out be the biggest change that you've seen in your time with the Combine?
No question. I think as soon as the network was created and got involved with the event, that certainly changed a lot of different logistics about the event. The league's been a great partner in working with us on the parts that are important to them and how that then impacts what we do on our side.
Jeff, who decides which players get invited?
So we have a player selection committee. A couple of years ago, we adjusted how we were doing things. You know, on average, my first 10 years, there was roughly 40 players who were drafted but were not invited to the combine. So we were trying to improve that statistic and improve that process so that the very best players were here. So 2 years ago, we opened up the selection process to all 32 teams. And 2 years ago, we had 28 teams participate in the process. And then this year, we had 31 teams participate in the process, which is really helpful for us to get a cross-section of evaluations to help ensure that we have the best players here. So that's the first round of voting for the seniors. And then after the underclassmen declare, we'll have a smaller committee. Generally, it's between 12 and 15 clubs. National, our scouting service, and Blesto, the other scouting service, they participated in it as well. And so that committee will then get together, review the underclassmen have declared, and then go back and review any seniors that we feel may have been left out during that first round of selections. But it's the most challenging part. It's subjective in nature. I think any evaluator would tell you you're going to get some of them wrong, and we certainly do. But it's our goal to get it right, and we work very hard at it. And last year, after the new process was implemented, only 24 players were drafted that we didn't invite to the combine. So we're hoping that we have a similar statistic this year, and that and it proves that our improved process is in fact improved.
Who decides which coaches run the on-field drills?
It's a good question. So about a month and a half ago, we asked all 32 clubs to provide workers to help us operate the event. So I mentioned earlier there's about 200 that we train. So I think this year we were offered 230 personnel from the clubs, and that's everybody from coaches to scouts to administrators. We even have some ladies who come from different teams that are administrators in scouting departments that help us in our office and in the hotel. Part of that group is the coaches that are working on field. Each club is guaranteed three coaches, and then they can put three additional in as alternates if we need them in specific positions.
There are 60 interviews for each team, the 15-minute interviews that are done at night. Who coordinates all of that?
A number of years ago, we built a scheduling system that has an algorithm written behind it for those schedules. So once we open up that portal to all 32 teams, they're allowed to go in and just select players. And they can select up to 30 from any one arrival day and 60 in total. And so the program schedules it for them. And the algorithm on the back end is built to protect certain time periods where we know that the player might be impacted with medical testing so that we don't have missed interviews. But in the instance that there's an interview that's missed because of a medical schedule, we will just reschedule that with the player. But each team is allowed to select their 60, and then the program schedules it for us.
Finally, what is the thing that would surprise people the most that the combine has to get scheduled about the 6 days?
I'm caught somewhere between the biggest surprise and the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is credentials. Fans know, sometimes coaching staffs change at the last minute. So do administrations. And then you always have errors on credentials. So managing that process with a relatively small staff, thankfully the NFL is involved in that credentialing process, and they help us with that. So credentialing is probably the biggest challenge for us, especially during the event, because it's timely. People need to get someplace, and typically they don't need their credential changed until immediately before they are walking into a meeting. So that's probably one of the greater challenges. I think for us, most recently, maybe the most unique is the changes in the players' diets. So something that we've been working hard on the past few years, and again this year, is making sure that the nutritional value is good for all 336 players. And as you might imagine, they have very different training patterns and eating habits. So that's one of the bigger challenges for us during registration this year. We asked players if they had specific allergies or dietary needs, and to our surprise, we had a lot of players come back. So we've been working with our chef at the hotel, who does a great job at the Crown Plaza, and we've been working with Center Plate, our catering provider at the stadium, and making sure that the players are getting what they need. It's a long, challenging event for the players, so we want to make sure that they're well fueled.
Counting the TV networks and SiriusXM, how many total media credentials will you give out for this event, and how does it compare with, say, 10 years ago?
So the media credentials are the only credentials that we don't handle on our end. Michael Signore and his group at NFL Communications manages that, thankfully for us. And I heard him announce last night to the players, the first group of players that arrived, that we have over 1,300 media members credentialed.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, and really a testament to the players and to the NFL as a whole.
That's Jeff Foster, who runs the scouting combine.
What a neat interview.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. Good job, Mike.
I thought he was really good. It was interesting to hear. Like, they have five people who work. I would think they would have this army of people who do it every day of the year.
Right, but it's just a couple guys.
Just a couple people just hanging out. They do a great job, and they do a great job coordinating the teams to help make it happen, and a lot of volunteers in the Indianapolis area. And I know there are other places that could do it, but in terms of the setup of the downtown, the facilities they have, the coordination with the hotels,
right.
They would be hard-pressed to find a better place than Indianapolis.
I'm a purist. I don't like change ever, but Indy is a city that just seems like it was designed for that. It's cold in Indy. It's always cold in Indy. You never have to go outside if you don't want to. Everything is walkable. People don't need cars. You can get to restaurants. You can get to shops if you need something. You can get from the hotel to where you're going.
Now, I'm going to say something as a native Middle Tennessean. If they keep building hotels the way they are in downtown Nashville,
right,
with the convention center, with the arena there, you know, could it be done in Nashville at some point? Probably not yet, but could it be discussed down the line?
It totally could, especially if we end up being one of the cities to get the draft in the next couple of years. That's the experiment. That's the testing ground right there. Could the combine come after? Maybe.
Well, we know what's going to come after this first edition of the OTP. The second edition of the OTP out Friday.
Well done.
Thank you. It'll be a preview of the AFC South heading into free agency. Free agency begins next week. And so we're going to take a look at the teams and what their needs are. And when you talk about needs for the draft, the first thing you need to talk about is needs for free agency, because if you fill some of those needs in March, then you can look at different things in April. The AFC South will be a division to watch, because three of the top eight teams in the league with salary cap space are in the AFC South.
It's such a fun time right now. It's an ever-evolving puzzle where things are constantly changing and moving around. And this upcoming episode really kind of lays out the possibilities and the what-ifs, and it's exciting.
That'll be Friday. Thanks for joining us. Remember, you could subscribe to the OTP by visiting titansonline.com/podcasts. And we hope you'll join us for our next one coming up on Friday. For Amy Wells, Mike Keats says, thanks for listening to the official Titans podcast.